Unbind him and let him go. Do you remember the first time you made a confession? I think for me it was when I was 6 or 7 years old, and it involved a pack of strawberry bubblegum and a Lucky's store manager. I had been grocery shopping with my mom, and after we got home and unpacked the groceries, well, there was one more item that didn't appear on the receipt. The aforementioned strawberry bubblegum had somehow stuck to these five little fingers in the checkout aisle. Now, I don't quite remember the question that my mom asked, but I do remember my words tumbling out and tears closely following. Then a trip with coins from my piggy bank back to Lucky's to pay amends and talk with that store manager. And finally, back at home, reassurance from my mom that this wasn't the end of things. Somehow, it was more like a new beginning. Last week's conversation in our catechumenate sounds like it was something else. For those unfamiliar with what a catechumenate might be, it's a millennia-old process of integration into the Christian faith. Originating in the first few centuries of the followers of Jesus, those who wished to join the faith would engage in a months-long, 2-year-long process of study, prayer, and fellowship in preparation for baptism at the Easter Vigil. For us at All Souls, this preparation begins at the start of Lent and continues well into the Easter season. Participants encounter their faith anew through Scripture, prayer, poetry, and practice. As part of their study, they are led by their mentors through the Book of Common Prayer, through its daily prayers, the baptism, Eucharist, pastoral rites, and the catechism. So last week, it was in their exploration of the rite of reconciliation of a penitent, what's also been known as the rite of confession, that they came across a little-known rubric or explanatory note about the rite, and it reads as follows. If you have this memorized, you can just call along. Another Christian may be asked to hear a confession, but it must be made clear to the penitent that absolution will not be pronounced. Instead, a declaration of forgiveness will be provided. Absolution, declaration of forgiveness. What is the difference? A lively discussion ensued, and it centered on this question: what, pray tell, is the practical difference between absolution and a declaration of forgiveness? Central to both is the belief that in this rite, forgiveness comes from God alone. God's forgiveness is declared, not made by this or any other priest. To that end, anyone hearing a confession, which could be any of us, anyone hearing a confession is declaring what we believe to be essentially true, that just as in the parable of the lost sons, the Father is ever looking to the horizon, waiting to receive and to forgive, even as we may be struggling to confess. That is what we mean by the declaration of forgiveness. And as the rubric notes, it can be declared by any Christian, lay or ordained. Then what of absolution? What purpose does it serve? Well, in a nutshell, absolution also involves the reintegration of the penitent into the fellowship of the church. And given their responsibility for the integrity of their fold of the flock, priests are particularly commissioned to receive those who are contrite so that the right relationship of the church can be celebrated once more. It was in my own reflection in responding to this question that I discovered the words of Lionel Mitchell, who was a sacramental theologian and one of the architects of the 1979 Book of Common Prayer. And so in his discussion on the rite of reconciliation, Mitchell offers what was just a startlingly obvious observation. He writes, "Christians are often called upon to hear the confessions of other Christians. Parents hear the confessions of their children. Friends hear the confessions of their friends." Of course. And so I wonder, when was the last time that you heard a confession? What did you declare? From strawberry bubblegum to broken promises, hearing a loved one's confession is part of what is vital, what it means to be in true relationship with another. And not just to hear it, but to be able to declare an even deeper truth than the brokenness that aches, which is that in our contrition, God is ready and waiting to forgive. Unbind him and let him go. So who here thought that our gospel could possibly be longer than it was these past 2 weeks? As I was reminded at an earlier service, just wait until next week. Today, though, we enter John chapter 11. It's the last of Jesus' seven sign acts in the Gospel of John, and it's the one that finally gets the attention of the religious authorities. We most often hear it at funerals, and it is remarkable in both its scope and its raw emotion. It's in this passage that we hear the raising of Lazarus 4 days after he has died. It's in this passage we hear Martha offering her trust in Jesus as the Anointed One, the Son of God. And it's in this passage that we see Jesus' death and resurrection prefigured. But for our time together, I'd like for us to turn our focus actually to the very end of this passage. For after Jesus is seen weeping at Mary's grief, at the grief of others, at his own grief, he walks to the tomb of Lazarus and says simply, "Take away the stone." And despite Martha's warning about the stench, for the body has begun to decay, Jesus then gives thanks to God and cries with a loud voice, "Lazarus, come out!" And out from the cave stumbles the dead man. Now what happens next? "Unbind him and let him go." But who unbinds Lazarus? Is it Jesus? No, it's not. Is it Lazarus himself? It cannot be. It is those around him. It is Lazarus' sisters, his friends. It is the people he lives with who are called upon to unbind their brother, their beloved. It is those around us who unbind us, who work to set us free. In fact, those words in Greek, deo, to bind, and luo, to release, are those very same words we find in the Gospel of Matthew in chapter 18, when Jesus tells his followers to bind or to loose when approached for forgiveness. And it's actually one of the core practices of a follower of Jesus. Not just of priests, to loose those who are bound and to allow ourselves to be set free. Friends, I don't see how we get to Easter if we cannot be set free. It's why every year at this time, in our approach to the feast at this table, we are reminded of our need to be reconciled. It's why Michael Lemaire has been guiding us in practices of forgiveness this Lent. We do all these things and more not out of compulsion, because it's not a proper Lent unless we've scourged ourselves, but because the church in her wisdom has recognized this deep-seated need that comes from being human. For when we live in this world, given our frailty and our blindness, experience tells me that we will hurt others. We will be wounded, but that we are not meant to live bound to our pain. Take a moment. Who is it for you? It may be very present, and may take some time to come to heart. But who is awaiting your release? How long has it been? Why has it been that long? Unbind her. Let her go. Unbind him. Let him go. I've been reminded these past couple of weeks that this unbinding does not simply need to be done between individuals. For there are fetters, or in the words of Paul of Tarsus, powers and principalities that bind scores of the beloved of God, whether it is the systems that allow for the sale of human beings for sexual predation within a 20 minutes drive of where we sit today. Five, thank you. Or those systems that have left tens of thousands without hope of escaping violence and relentless poverty, they are real. And it is why we are beginning this long process of transforming the ways that we as a parish live and engage in our wider community. Because we will continue to work alongside folks like the Catholic workers of the Dorothy Day Houses, alleviating hunger and pain, even as we start to join with those who are struggling to unbind the vulnerable, who are kept captive through systemic injustice. Unbind him and let him go. At the close, I'd like to ask a question from a scholar who is well-versed in our fear of what awaits. In the familiar darkness of your fears and compulsions, in the blocked caves of your obsessions and hopelessness, amid the stench of your own addictions and despair, what is it like to leave these behind and come out? Palm Sunday is a week from today, Holy Week and Easter to follow. And this is a question for you and for me. What might it be like to be vulnerable enough that another, stranger or beloved, could unwrap that which has held us? What might it be like to let go of that which we clutch because of our fears of being seen and known? What might it be like to trust that we will be met by others, waiting to set us free? What might it be like to hear, while still in the darkness, these words, strong and true? Unbind him and let him go.